It's brand new, season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Pennies Going in Raw is a production of iHeartRadio. The opinions expressed in the following podcast are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide education and entertainment about the financial industry and the stock market. Enjoy!
On this episode of Pennies Going in Raw, we discuss multi-day runners, this week in the market, and a little more.
You find out life's this game of pennies.
Oh, you guys know we only have a 40% runner. Hello? 40% right is a f***ing killing.
We've been compliant for too long. It's time we go to war.
I don't have a Roth.
Q knows so much about the market that his brain doesn't have enough room for grammar.
Hey, who told me about IDEX? It's going up a shit ton now.
Rob, 4%, baby.
No way.
4%.
You asked the exact same question with two words different.
It's like, f***, man, I just got dick whipped for like 20%, and now that f***er's up like 50.
I bet Warren Buffett never did that.
I'm just making this voice memo to call out unusual whales to a fight.
The pennies we need are everywhere around us.
Pennies.
Going in raw.
Featuring Dan, Deity of Dips,
and Hugh Honey.
Produced by Vinny
and Christian.
Let's go, baby.
Welcome back to another episode of Pennies Going in Raw. Today is Sunday, November the 28th, and you can never tell us we don't love you ever again. I just got off an airplane. I Ubered straight here. It is rivalry weekend right now. It is Saturday. The Auburn game, Auburn, Alabama, which I'm sure we'll get mollywopped in, comes on in 40 minutes. Michigan and Ohio State are in a good one. And boy, do I want to be watching it. But instead, I get to talk to you lovely people. But look, swings still kind of beat down. Volume in the market this week wasn't great. I mean, that's expected with a 3.5-day week. You still had a couple runners, but at the same time, it seemed like such a convenient time for a very new COVID strain to come out. First, we had the Wuhan, then we had the Delta, and now we got the South African one. How out of just nowhere just happened to happen right on the lowest volume week, right when things are getting hot? Did just want to ruin our days or what?
Well, that's a funny thing is that two things that I find really coincidental. One being that when all of this was happening, I mean, how many times did the WHO come out and say, this isn't a pandemic, relax, this isn't a pandemic, you know, these strains have nothing to worry about. And then 5 minutes before the market closes on Friday, WHO comes out and says that the African strain is of great concern. Are you fucking serious? Like, it's almost like that saying inside when you're trading stocks and it's like buy the rumor, sell the news. It's kind of like that's like how the WHO feels like, in my opinion. You know,
it's kind of crazy that the buy the rumor, sell the news thing is so irrelevant almost right now due to the state of the market that we almost forget what used to be just said every day. You know, buy the rumor, sell the news. But now it's like the market's so crazy that, you know, if something even has a rumor, you want to buy the speculation of the rumor.
It's crazy. And the thing for me right now is that I'll be a buyer of SPY. SPY's quickly approaching that 355 level of support. If we flush through there, I'll probably start a position long. This, in my opinion, was a pure technical sell-off, and the market makers are hiding the sell-off in the COVID headlines. And not that the COVID headlines aren't for cause of worry.
Yeah, we don't want to downplay anything. You know, if you have family in South Africa, you know, travel bans are now in place, and that totally uffed up things for the holidays for a lot of people. So obviously, if you're in those situations, condolences.
But for us to sit here and say that, you know, I mean, the market was down 800 points or something, about 1.5%. So for us to say that the African strain is economically, you know, affecting the market 800 points, it is a little bit of a stretch. Fundamentally, although it's a shame and we don't want to see new strains, it's fundamentally not going to affect the economy that much. In fact, if anything, you know, and this might be like a little like capitalist minded, but if anything, like a new COVID strain probably just gives the Fed a reason to continue to buy and not to taper. So if anything, that's probably bullish. In my opinion, this SPY sell-off or, you know, this SPY, you know, small downtrend is purely technical and is just being, you know, hidden underneath the headlines. If we do flush that 355 support, I'll be a buyer. Or if we come down to that 355 support, I'm talking about SPY, you know, and we start to consolidate there and curl back up, I'll also be a buyer. In my opinion, I think that by the first or second week of January, we'll be at all-time highs again.
Yeah, you've mentioned in a couple past episodes that, you know, the market needs a pullback and it doesn't really matter what it is. It needs one, even if it's just some, you know, potentially whatever headline. Is this, and again, not trying to downplay it, is this that potential whatever headline?
100%. This is what we've been looking for what feels like, I mean, me personally, like 3 weeks. I think I tweeted it out like 2 weeks ago. I said this low volume melt up can continue longer than most people expect it to. That being said, when the sentiment changes, it can be like a hot knife cutting through butter. And this is what we're seeing. I mean, we're in low volume and the market was down 1.5%. To me, all that says is that, you know, this is purely technical. I've been looking for a pullback. Honestly, I wouldn't even mind 340. Hell, 330. You know, like I wouldn't even mind that.
That would cause a lot of panic. I think you may mean 430.
Oh, yeah, 430. That's right. Sorry. Okay, 430. Yeah, you know, I wouldn't even mind that. And that's me personally, you know, like this is personally, even if I was, you know, if I had my 401k on the sideline right now, I'd probably be buying. You know, Apple got smoked a little bit last week. You know, I mean, Facebook, you know, and what is it? It's Disney's underneath 150.
That's your generational buying opportunity.
Listen, I'll say it here, and in 20 years, I know. In 20 years, listen, if Disney's at 150 in 20 years, I'll take it on the chin.
It's just in tapering around there for a while.
Yeah, for the last 20 years, like thanks, Hugh. Yeah, listen. Me personally, Disney is a generational hold. It is. It has more users than Netflix. And I think it's only worth about 20% more than that. And it's got the damn park, the whole damn park. I mean, forget the whole like innovation shit and like the entertainment shit.
And not to mention whenever we can resurrect brains, I mean, we'll just get Walt Disney's from under there. And I'm sure the stock price will rocket.
It will rocket. You know what I mean? You know, we need Elon Musk as CEO for Disney. I mean, that would be.
You don't think he's got his hands full?
Nah, he's fine. Yeah, he's fine. Any man that has the time to tweet at 3 a.m. Due to inflation, 420 has gone up by 69 is a man with enough time to be CEO of Disney.
Yeah.
Yeah. But personally, you know, back to what we were talking about. If my 401k was on the sideline or I had a little bit of money to play with, you know, I would be a buyer here. I truly do not see any reason for this other than a technical sell-off. As I said, to just wrap it up, that 455 support, if it flushes under there, I'm talking a low volume flush under there, I'll be a buyer there of some calls near all-time high. for maybe like February, give myself a little bit of time. And again, is that, you know, when I'm taking these options, I'm giving myself a little bit more time in case there's more downside. I wouldn't mind buying the February options, you know, taking a starter on the options and us going down to 430. I'm okay with that. You know, like I'd rather see the quote unquote max pain. You know, like we saw small caps got killed last week because of this low volume, you know, SPY pullback. And so for me personally, I just think that that means that we rally harder. Because again, is that if any of you guys use those volume bars and those volume analysis bars on your charts, you know, we're in such a low volume area that it doesn't take much to go one way or the other. You know, it's kind of been like we've just been going down since Powell said they was going to be renominated. To me personally, fundamentally, from a fundamental standpoint, that is way more important than anything because Powell is the man. And, you know, the man with all the keys, you know, he's the man waiting, and he decides who gets into heaven and who doesn't, in my opinion. So,
and right now we're on stock purgatory.
So to me personally, I'm a buyer here. I wouldn't mind a bigger pullback than what we're at, but I'm getting close to buying February options near all-time high. And, you know, I'll put it out there. I think that we probably see all-time highs by the second week of January.
Well, it is day after Black Friday when we're recording this, and we're about to get into our main topic, and we don't like adding this at the end, so, you know, for our dear listeners that actually listen, you know, we want to give this to you. I think we should give away $100 and $250 to three Whoa. People that retweet and like and obviously follow PGIR Pod, and we'll pick it out, how about... before Wednesday's episode, but we'll announce it on Wednesday's episode as well.
We're giving money away?
Yeah, I'll give away the $100 and, you know, you'll give away the $250 bills. We'll do Cash App. You know, we try to do Amazon gift cards, but we're too lazy for that. Just make sure you retweet and you like, and we'll pick one of the retweets and likes, and we'll know because we're kind of lacking on the retweets on the pod episode. So
yeah, what are you guys not enjoying our content? What
yeah, man, schmucks? Share it, guys. Come on. But yeah, no. If you guys retweet and like it, we'll pick one out and we'll figure it out and we'll get three of y'all boys some little cash flow for.
I can't believe I'm giving money away.
Fuck you, dude. I'll give it away because I'm the lovely host.
Oh, whoa. You don't get to be a man of the people.
Hey, mister, I'm not spending $5 on Starbucks, but I'll buy a brand new Ferrari.
whoa. I'm not buying a Ferrari. Listen. There's two things. Okay. I am looking for a car. As I said, on my tweet, okay, I'm actually going to let you guys pick out what car I buy once I decide between the two. I can tell you though that the chances of it being a Ferrari are extremely, very extremely low. But maybe one day.
Hey, and comment and don't say what, but just to enter, make sure you comment and say, just to so other people don't just fucking retweet and like it, make sure to comment what kind of car Hugh should get in responses to the tweet. You toss out retweet and like, you let Hugh know, we'll get you entered. All right.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess. The 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again. The First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances. And the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Because I know, you know, whenever I got my car, everyone let me know why I got the wrong one. But so going into our main topic, and it's kind of relevant because even though last week was pretty shitty for, you know, a lot of swings, there were two big multi-day runners. And that's kind of what we want to talk about today, are multi-day runners, how to know when, you know, when to hold, when they're going to keep going. Obviously, we talk about scaling out a lot, but this week we saw ISPC go from around $5 all the way to above $22, around $23. You saw LGVN go from under $10 to around $44. Insane runs of 400% and looks like around 400% again. Crazy, crazy moves, and they happened over the course of a week. They kind of staggered on that Tuesday and Wednesday for ISPC, but just rocketed on Friday. And for LGVN, I mean, it just kind of here up and then down, here up and then down. Perfect for day trades, but at the same time, perfect if you held it as well.
Yeah, yeah. So LGVN especially, I think it was mostly due to that T plus two. So a lot of times, like, we don't really have to worry about this now, but you know, when you usually do a transaction, it's the transaction day plus 2 days to settle. Okay. Most of us don't have to worry about this. Actually, real side note. I tweeted something the other night about my old notes. I can't believe the difference in the brokers from a few years ago. Like, I truly remember having to account for the $14 commission. Like, that's how stressed I was and how much the commission meant. So it's crazy. And also, like I said, with like the T plus two, like, that used to be like a real thing. Like, you had to account for the fact that you were going to hold this for a few days. But so with the multi-day runners, there's a few things that is really important. And the biggest thing that everything always comes back to, and I'm hoping that like half of you are hearing me inside your voice say volume, even before I said volume, if that makes sense, because what's going to keep these, you know, running for multi-days. And I mean, let's go back to DWAC. What happens? Shorts get in there. There's a good story. Enough volume comes. It churns. Boom. Explosion to the upside. The shorts pack in. It consolidates. It's not failing. It's soaking. Explosion move up. You know, shorts cover. Yeah, and so that move continuously happens. But then what ends up happening enough times, you know, throughout the day, especially if it has a good enough story like DWAC, you know, a good enough story.
That story was just Trump.
Exactly. Well, yeah, when I say good enough
for
story,
a lot of people, that's a good enough story.
Yeah. When I say good enough story, I mean, truly, it just like something like GameStop, you know, like GameStop is a perfect example, or AMC, you know, everybody took their first girlfriend to AMC, you know, like, that's a good enough story for, like, you know, some 35-year-old who knows absolutely nothing about the stock market, be like, yeah, AMC, like, they had some good ass movies, like, hell yeah.
They had great AMC popcorn.
Yeah, great overpriced popcorn. Like this is a no-brainer, babe. So when I say good story, I mean truly like it's a story where, you know, where truly non-traders can get behind it, you know, like, it doesn't really have to do with the flow. Like, the catalyst isn't like, you know, something that only like 10% of the population will truly understand. So, you know, a good enough of a story with enough volume and enough shorts continuously trying to get in there. Whoa, hang on. That is really in my face.
He's got a little light in his face. So a little intermission. I hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving. Okay, he's back. But yeah, shorts much piling in, man.
Yeah, so with enough shorts continuously being stubborn and piling in, you know, on those big moves. And listen, you can short those things, give great opportunity, especially like I'm going to continue to talk about DWAC. DWAC, especially like in the 60s, gave $2, $3 moves with no issue. But that being said, if you didn't cover and you weren't nimble with your trades on the short side, I mean, you could have truly gotten smoked more than once. So again, all it takes is a good enough of a story, enough people like believing and, you know, putting their money behind it, you know, apes, if you will, plus enough shorts that continue to just be stubborn and every single big move just pile in, every single big move just pile in. And if that continues into the second day, you know, and it doesn't necessarily, you don't need to see necessarily like big ass moves the second day. But if it's kind of just hanging around, what I mean by that is like 4 a.m., it doesn't gap down, you know, it doesn't gap down like a good bit, you know, and like the volume's still churning, like, you know, let's call it like 200 million shares, 300 million shares. That if you're a short trader, that is a huge red flag. And if you're a long bias trader, that usually means that you can get some sparks into the second and third day. Because again, you know, it comes down to what's the shiny.
So is the main worry holding it over that first night? Because that second day is where you really confirm if it's going to, obviously, I mean, that's 20/20 hindsight. Obviously, if it runs the next day, it's going to be a multi-day runner. That's common sense. But at the same time, that first morning after is where you really see, hey, if this thing can really power through again.
The biggest thing for me would be that would actually be pre-market. You know, that's why I totally would never hold that many shorts over, because if it's going, you know, I'm talking Eastern time, if into that 8 p.m. Eastern time bell, like there's still tens of hundreds of thousands of trades going through, you know, volume on it. That's a huge red flag. You have to cover. Like you have to cover, because if there's volume going into that 8 p.m. bell, then it's probably going to gap up. You know, one of the reasons that that things gap down is because into that 8 p.m. bell, there's just no volume. So at 4 a.m. the next morning, there's no volume there. So it gaps down. You know, there's no bids, no volume, and it gaps down. And even still, you know, maybe 9:30, 10 a.m., you see a move back towards, you know, maybe a slight move back towards green, but, you know, it might not ever get there. You know, if anything, that move at 10 a.m. back up is probably just a move for shorts to reposition. But the scary thing from the short side is when it's like, you know, that 7 to 8 p.m. time period, that last hour before close. And I mean, shit is just, I mean, the volume is just going nuts. And you're like, who the hell's trading this? You know, hundreds of thousands of shares. Who the hell's doing this? You know, that's when, if you're a short trader, you have to cover. I mean, you have to cover, because if it gaps up at 4 a.m. and it runs another 40%, I mean, it's over. You know, if it got, like I said, if at 4 a.m. it gets up and it's 40%, it's going to be an all day runner, because now everybody who might have sold it yesterday because, you know, they didn't want to hold it overnight, who still believes in the story, they're going to go back in on a dip. You know, it's similar to what I was just talking about from the short side. When something gaps down and then it kind of comes back and retests that high, that's a chance for shorts to reposition. Okay.
Yeah, is that whenever people, because I mean, a lot of people say trapping shorts, but a lot of time are they just getting their entry?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. The shorts are, listen, a smart short is probably not going to hold it overnight, is going to, if it gaps down, something, you know, the top three runners, unless you're a really good short intraday trader, you're probably not going to hold it overnight. And if you do hold it overnight, it's maybe small after a big win, you know, like that, like from, in my experience, from the guys who I talk to who are really experienced shorts, intraday and even swings, you know, they usually don't hold it any overnight. Maybe they'll hold 10% of their position overnight if it's a home run hitter. So, but like I said, is that if it gaps down, any kind of move up near the bell, that 9:30 a.m., that 10 a.m. is usually just a reason to reposition down. You know, it's usually just like maybe the shorts that were overnight are covering, you know, a few longs who still believe or are buying the dip, you know. So it's like that last move up before the dead kill. From the long side, if something gaps up and then it dips, that's how longs reposition for the long side. So like I just said, if it gaps down and then comes back up, that's a chance for shorts to reposition down, especially on when, if it's trading about a third of the volume from the previous day. From the long side, if there's tons of volume and it gaps up, let's say another 35, 40%, and then it dips into open, that's a chance for longs to reposition to long side. That's just from my experience. That's the way that I like to think about it. You know, see if you guys notice that as well. And those are the ones where, you know, don't try not to overcomplicate these, trading as much as possible. Okay. Gaps down, it starts to go on low volume, a chance to reposition to the short side. Gaps up on good volume, runs into that APM, gaps up, dips in the open. That's a chance for longs to reposition on the long side, especially if it has a good story. Don't overcomplicate it. Keep it simple.
Yeah. And another thing you kind of pointed out with like where there's just, hey, some shorts trying to get a position and hey, maybe some longs that still believe are buying. It's like the last few soldiers on a battlefield. You know, you don't want to be the hero and not an Onoda. Sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong. Do you know who he is?
No, I don't think
he's
so.
He's a Japanese soldier that fought World War II for 30 years.
Oh,
yeah,
shit.
He didn't know the war ended.
Is this
so
what you
just
were looking at Wikipedia the other night?
No.
What did I see you tweet about?
Judaism in Rugrats? No, that was amazing. Yeah, when it was like Tommy's actions toward Dill Pickles in the Rugrats movie symbolized the sacrifice of Isaac. I was like, all right, I need to look into this. But no, this guy just forgot that never found out the war ended. You know, so he just kept fighting. It's like, hey, dude, we're not trading DWAC anymore. Okay. Like we're done.
Yeah.
You know, you're wasting your fucking time, man.
Yeah. No, you're right. And the biggest thing that everything comes down to, any trade, long, short, etc., comes down to volume. That's everything comes down to volume. If there is one thing that you need to, you don't have to understand anything else. You don't have to use anything else. But I'm telling you right now is that if there's one indicator that you can use and you could be trade efficiently with, it would be volume.
Yeah. No, just being able to see like, hey, someone just bought 150,000 shares of this $10 stock. He spent $1.5 million. Either he just made a big fat finger or he may know a little bit more than that, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's stuff like that. Just watching is volume is essentially just being able to watch level two and all the time, just being able to check it out. You know, you'll be able to see those walls being eaten there as well.
And the cool thing about volume is that you can backtest all this. So I would almost bet a pretty good amount that if you backtested the top three daily runners, you know, let's from the previous day, and you track their volume during pre-market, and if that same volume was on track, that it probably had a move the second day. Or instead, the same token, if you backtested the top three volume gainers from the previous day, and you tested them during pre-market and they were only on pace for a third of the relative volume, that they probably ended the day down. I would probably bet a pretty good chunk on that. And again, don't overcomplicate. Those are things that, like, as you get into trading and as you start to pick up more, you know, more experience and more time in front of the screens, that's something that you'll pick up on. So to my homies that are like, wow, how the hell do you figure that out? You know, it all comes with screen time. And those are little things that you'll pick up. You know, there's tons of little nuggets. When you're building a trade, even if it's just a day trade, you're building a thesis, you know, a big grand thesis. And that's going to be one of the key points that I usually build into a thesis.
How much like more volume do you think you need on that second day to like, what do you look for in the volume in pre-market? Like you got to be looking for something specific, obviously, oh shit, it's a lot of volume, or hey, there was this much yesterday, I need this much. Is there any specific numbers you kind of look for just to secure that I'm definitely getting back in? Because I mean, the way you mentioned is, hey, yeah, that first night is the scariest for longs and for shorts, because it can gap down or it can gap up or it can, you know, just look like it's going to have that dip and pop again. You see that dip the next day as a long, but you still see a good bit of volume coming in. What exactly are you looking for confirmation to re-enter on that second day?
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess, the 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again, the First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances. And the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, so for me personally, I don't want it to really, I would want it to, again, my favorite kind of form, I'll say, is when it runs into that APM with good volume and then it gaps up and then dips down. That's my personal favorite. So even if, you know, I'm getting it maybe a dollar higher than where I would have liked to, or, you know, even 10 or 15% higher, let's say, I'm okay with that because that strategy and that pattern usually, you know, it works out well for me, at least for the morning of the next day. If it dips, and, you know, most of the time I would say that it probably needs another catalyst, because if it dips, then that just probably means that volume died off. And, you know, again, it comes down to supply and demand, you know, too much supply, you know, not enough demand, and that, and it brought it down. So something like, what was it, LGVN, they got FDA approved, and then it came out that it wasn't FDA approved. And then, like, after hours, it was official FDA approval. Something like that is like a story where it's like, okay, like, it wasn't, so it wasn't FDA approved, so shorts all got packed in. And then out of nowhere, FDA comes, and FDA approval does actually come. So now all the longs that sold because there wasn't FDA approval are now rebuying it. And all the shorts that are packed in there are going to cover, or, you know, maybe they don't have their breaking news on. And so they're going to cover once that thing starts to go. So those are one of the stories where, and again, it's a small float. So it trade like 100 times its float or something. You know, those are one of the stories where I can be like, okay, yeah, this thing probably has a lot left in it. But for a regular something that gets news and then the next morning it dips, I mean, it would have to dip. Like, it's one of those like arbitrage situations where like maybe it dips like 40% off highs and it was fundamentally sound news. Those are one of the times where I could get behind dip buying. But if it's not fundamentally sound news and it just, you know, and it just opens the day down like 20%, then I'm probably not going to touch it. It would have to increase relative volume by, you know, maybe 10 or 15X. And to do that, it probably needs another catalyst.
At what point do you, and if you get worried about an offering? I mean, because I know some of these companies are scummy, and a lot of these that run 5 days in a row, maybe small caps, a lot of small caps, kind of scummy. You know, where do you kind of get worried? I mean, you know, some of them will ride it until it's as high as it can to drop it. And then others, you know, they'll be like, they'll get greedy and then it'll dip. Be like, they're just like us, you know, they're trying to get that bag. So, I mean, like, where do you get worried? And is it just more of a personality of that company?
Yeah, it's definitely a personality of that company. I mean, it only takes about 5 seconds to look up a company and see, you know, how many offerings they've done in the past 5 years, you know, what's the average size of the offering, you know, like, you can get a good sense of the company. The other thing, and this is just a rule of thumb, is that if you're a swinger or a day trader, is that if you're a swinger or a day trader and they only have a month or two worth of cash, or fuck, even like only a quarter or two, I mean, you gotta be, especially if there's a shelf offering, you're asking for it. I mean, you're truly asking to get dumped on. You know, I mean, if someone puts out news I'll just put out like a prime example. Okay. And I know there's going to be like two or three listeners that are like, oh yeah, that happened to me. You know, if a company releases news like, hey, we are thinking about, you know, we are going to move into the NFT space, or we are going to move towards Bitcoin mining, or we are going to move into the EV company. And like, you start to go on Twitter and you start to look around, and people are tagging the ticker, saying stuff like, you know, if they're saying stuff like along the lines of like, wasn't this company just like a drug company? Now they're going to the EV space. You know, that's a big red flag. The next big red flag is that if they have absolutely no plans and they're releasing a press release on like a hot topic, like weed, like EVs, like Bitcoin, like NFTs, something like that, you know, like a key word, you know, something like that. And they have no plans and they're just saying, hey, we plan to in the future, you know, mine Bitcoin, something like that. Boom, two big red flags. The next big one is that, like I said, if they only have enough cash for the next quarter or two, big, big red flag. You know, again, it's going to come down to the company, you know, looking into the company and seeing, you know, what their revenues are, what their cash burn is. Do they do a lot of offerings? But overall, if I were a day trader and they had a shelf offering and it was, if they had a shelf offering and what's the word I'm looking for? And they released kind of like fluffy news, I would probably just stay away. Unless, because the thing is that you'll see like a lot of traders talk about like it feels like there's a goalie there. What's really hard to decipher, and it's actually like pretty much impossible to decipher, is if someone's sitting there soaking or if they're just goalkeeping that bottom. So what I mean by that is that, is there kind of like that false bottom, you know, that false bottom, was not a roof. What's the other one on the bottom? Floor.
A floor? Floor.
Yeah, that's what I meant. That's what I meant.
Michael Jordan, you know, the ceiling is the floor. Ceiling's the roof or whatever the fuck he said.
But so if it feels like, you know, there's like kind of like that false floor. And what I mean
also,
by that is
also
that,
just so everyone knows, Hugh did not know the word for floor.
The I opposite think of roof. Like a, like I was, the I was bottom, just, you know, like carpet. Yeah, the, I wanted to say carpet.
Yeah, the bottom of the building that you put your feet on and shit. Yeah, okay. So false floor.
I'm just
floors.
Thinking about other shit, you know? Like I'm thinking about shit, you know? I'm thinking about good shit, you know?
Yeah, he's shit and, for brains.
Yeah. And so anyway, so it's really hard to tell if a stock is soaking or if it's, you know, if there's like someone protecting that floor. Because what sometimes happens is that a market maker is literally waiting. And what I mean by waiting is that they're literally waiting by the phone, waiting for a company to drop the offering. Because at the end of the day, you know, that market maker or that fund or that brokerage, you know, they're getting money for dropping the offering. You know, they're getting a piece of the pie. So they want it to be held up as well. So they might be, you know, or not organically, but you know, they might be unorganically holding the stock up and waiting for that phone call to then drop the offering. You know, sometimes like a board has to meet and approve the offering and stuff like that. So if you ever feel like, you know, it's kind of low volume and it just doesn't feel right, you know, like at the end of the day, if it doesn't feel right, you know, maybe there's not a lot of volume. And every time that it comes down to that like $10 level, it gets back up. And every time it comes down, it gets back up. You know, you can scalp that. But just know, and that's where some of those knives come, is that at some point during the day, they're going to rug pull that thing. And, you know, it's going to go down $2 to $3 a share. And it's literally like dumping on the stock because that's what they're doing. It's an ATM. It's an at the market offering. So all they're going to do is just dump 200, 300,000 shares on the market, you know? And so that's something to be aware of. Okay. So more of the story is that check how many offerings they've done since the past 3 to 5 years. You know, see their burn rate. Do they have enough cash for the next quarter or two? Is the news that they released fluff? You know, is it a company like, should this company be talking about EVs or Bitcoins when, you know, maybe it's a pharma or maybe it's a retail? Probably not, you know? So that's something to keep aware of. And that's just one of the ways that you can stay safe out there.
All right. Well, this one is a question for the listeners. Here's a list of topics that we thought about doing for today, but we decided on this one. And you guys can help us pick out what we're doing next week. It's DD versus speculation versus rumor. And hey, if you fucking put this in the responses, you may get, you know, a little more love for one of those $50 things. Maybe you only get one of the $50 ones if you help us pick. DD versus speculation versus rumor. Keeping healthy relationships and habits while trading, not ignoring responsibilities, getting outside, getting enough sleep, etc.
what to do after you blow up your account. And lastly, journaling, tracking trades, and tracking market data slash patterns. We can run over any of those and just let us know in the responses. And lastly, as it is rivalry week, looks like Ohio State's not going to do too well. Drew, I'm sorry, buddy. However, you know, don't call it a comeback. A lot of football left, 4 minutes. Who do you think is going to win the playoffs this year, Hugh? I think I might be on your side. I know you're a slight Georgia fan for whatever reason, as most New Jerseyans are.
I'm diehard dogs, baby.
Yeah, as an Auburn fan, I'll be honest, I don't want to see it, as they haven't won a championship since the 80s. And, you know, at least we got one in 2010. Yeah. Ooh, yeah, I've never seen a group of grown-ass men bark. However, you know, that's Georgia for you. You know, I think I may be with you. I thought Ohio State was the only one that'd be able to pull it off, but don't think Cincinnati or Notre Dame's going to be able to. So, War Eagle anyways, and I'm about to go watch us get mollywopped by Bama. However, War Eagle, and we will see you guys on Wednesday. Take care.
Go Dogs!
Penny's Going in Raw is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.